This is Extraordinary Lives, a podcast from the team at Lad Bible who bring you Minutes With. If you've ever watched an episode, you'll know the type of stories you can expect from us. Gangsters.
The police just come round with guns. No, they're right, now we're f***.
Hackers.
We hacked the Prime Minister of Tunisia.
Spies.
The whole of the area where we were was infested with Stasi vehicles.
And people who've been through unique experiences.
You know, one thing you should know about espionage, as well as bomb making, the first mistake is your last mistake.
In this new series, we get stuck into a more in-depth conversation with some extraordinary people who've led extraordinary lives.
I don't mind talking about it because I'm not ashamed. And I didn't realise that anyone would find out or know, or anyone would judge me for it.
I'm Ben Powell Jones, and in this episode, we sit down with Chet Sandhu, an international drug smuggler in the 90s who was eventually caught and did time in Europe's most dangerous prison.
I got put in a container outside with no windows and no food or water for 2 days.
We first filmed with Chet at the end of 2020. First impressions, this is someone you don't mess with. He looks tough, he clearly works out, he's got a teardrop tattoo under his eye, and when he looks at you, he fixes you with an unblinking stare. Chet's from an Indian Sikh family, and he suffered racial abuse growing up in a small English village.
So we had, like, all rough, yeah? We got spat on, got called with this.
He moved to Newcastle as an early adult and started taking and dealing steroids. Chet smuggled hundreds of thousands of pills from Pakistan, but was caught in Alicante, Spain in 1999. Chet's quite a character. It's fair to say he's pretty blasé about running a drugs ring involving young mules, prostitutes, and paying off airport security with porn magazines. He's also blasé about the serious violence he was a part of in prison. A warning before we get into the episode that there are mentions of racist language and extreme violence. This is Chet's story. Chet, obviously I know you, but for people who are watching this or listening for the first time, could you just tell me who you are?
Who I am? Drug smuggler, international, got caught with the biggest seizure, Spanish history, pharmaceutical drugs, class A. And then after that, we controlled areas, Newcastle, northeast. I've done 11 years in jail. And apart from that, after this, I've been all good, yeah?
I mean, it's a hell of an intro. What we're going to do now is I'm going to just go back to where it all started with you, if that's all right.
Go on then.
I'm just going to ask you straight up, what was your childhood like?
Childhood was shit. Born 1968, and it was a rough old do. Racism, yeah, was like high then, yeah, okay? The Conservatives then, 1969, their like slogan to win was, if you want a for a neighbour, vote Labour. Okay, so this is what we had to deal with. And then it was all legal, all this shit, yeah? So we had like all rough, yeah? We got spat on, got caught with this.
Well, where are you? Where are you based here?
Hitchin, Hertfordshire.
Right.
Yeah. That's where my dad came in. The family, he moved in. We had to live with our uncles. There was about 11 of us in one house.
Wow.
Yeah. Because we can't afford anything, yeah? But this is when the government wanted people to come in from India to work. So my dad and my mum came over. But all we got was shit, man.
So was there a sense that you'd been kind of brought here and welcomed here by the government, but when you got here, it was a different situation to what had been expected?
Well, that's what my dad thought, yeah, because they just wanted out of India at the end of the day. They thought, you hear stories in India, people going on about it, the streets are paved with gold, blah, blah, blah. No, they're not. It's a fucking nightmare.
Right.
It's a nightmare, yeah. Okay. It's a nightmare, yeah. So they all come running over here because they want to escape that one. But once I get here, it's a different fucking story.
Right. And were you born here or were you brought over?
Born here, yes.
Born here. So even born here, you immediately experienced a difference and a bad treatment.
Yeah, yes. I couldn't speak English until I was 3. In my house, we only spoke Punjabi, because that's my mum and dad. That was their native tongue. And I didn't mix with nobody. I wasn't allowed to mix with nobody. And a stutter I had, disabilities. I was like backward a little bit, you know?
What do you mean by
backward? Yeah, because I had like, it was like quite hard work for me, man. You know?
Were you at school and that kind of thing?
No, nursery, I didn't go. The first time I went to school, they just held me back in the house, my mum and dad. Used to put us in childcare minders, and that house got raided by the police. The first time I was in the cells, I was 3 years old, because these were illegal childminders, and they were like taking on loads of kids. And my mum and dad used to like drop me and my sister off at this house, and there was like a mixture of children there, yeah, okay? All colours, every fucking nation there, blah, blah, blah. Don't know who these people were, but my mum and dad had to go to work. So they used to look after us, but they were illegal. They got a raid of the police. The police were raided. They locked us all up in the bathroom upstairs. The police broke the door down. I was only 3 years old. My sister was two. And then they all took us to cells until our mum and dad's come to pick us up.
Do you remember this, or is it something you've been told about afterwards?
No, I remember. The first time I got arrested and that police raid, we got locked in the bathroom and then we all got put in the cells. Because that's how it worked back in the day. They just put us all in cells, kids in cells, yeah.
3 years old?
Yeah, yes. That happened then.
I mean, it's kind of a bad setup for your relationship with the law, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of like, if you're one of your first members.
Well, yes. A three, and I hated them initially.
And when you talk about things about getting spat on in the street and stuff like that, I mean, was that just out and out racism? Just people seeing you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Skinheads were the norm, the big boots, the braces, blah, blah, blah. They used to walk around in town. Bashing was the norm. It wasn't even illegal. You couldn't even, if you got fucked up, if you were a back then, of the police would say, okay, that's normal.
Right. So
yeah, it's normal.
Even at that age, at this age when you're getting attacked, it must have been teenage years or something?
No, I was only fucking 6, 7 and that. But my mum and dad, they were fucking on it, yeah? Getting a shit. And I felt all that. And it was in 1984, we moved up to Newcastle.
Yeah.
To try and get a better life. And I was in a shop there, and we were the first brown people to move up to that area. And that was a scary experience.
Being the first ones in that
area?
Yeah,
the first ones there, because there was like, I was on the till, blah, 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 and a kid will say, Ma, what's that? And she'll say, it's a p-.
Jesus Christ.
And you'll say, I've never seen one of them before, because we were the first ones there. And they all used to laugh in the queue. They used to laugh, and money... I used to put the money in my hand, throw it on the front counter because we're brown.
So they didn't want to like touch hands?
They don't want to touch me, man.
So from an early age, it sounds like you were kind of siloed off a bit.
It's well,
like,
yes, I hated it. I hated everything.
Newcastle
too. From being a child, I hated it. A stutter I had, bullied in school. Yes, I got all the way through it. When I got out of that, more of it, and then I fucking had enough, man. And then when I react.
Did you have friends at that point?
No.
None?
None.
Family members of similar age, anything like that?
None. A brother, sister, brothers, he moved out, went to uni, blah, blah, blah. 5 years older than me, he didn't want any part of this shit. Because he was gay, right? And back then, to be gay and to be Sikh is like
a
big no-no, yeah? Okay, you are like condemned. And
oh, so did he just say goodbye to the whole...
And went to Manchester Uni, yeah, right. And did his own thing, right. Which is fair enough,
mm-hmm.
I don't blame him for that. My sister, a year younger, she came up afterwards and I took care of them. But we all just took shit.
Okay. So you got to this point where you were like, I've had enough of taking shit, and you started to push back.
Yeah.
What point is it then you start interacting with society? Like, what's your first job as a kind of like...
First job, I was just in the shop, yeah? My dad had a shop there. So I was just like staff member, and I worked for free. I used to come home from school, wasn't allowed to go out, wasn't allowed to do this, wasn't allowed to do that. I had to go back, stack the shelves, and go on the till while my old man went on the piss.
Mm. Now, do you still see your siblings and your family? Are you still close with them?
My mum, my dad, cool. My brother, my sister. Yeah, we're all right-ish. Because they never backed me up yet, and they're not really happy with what I've done in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I'm not happy with what they've done either. Because
mm-hmm.
I had to back them up, you know. I'm the one that took the shit. So the one that takes the shit, you hate him for it? Why? Because I'm the one that stuck there. I'm the one that stayed there. I'm the one that got spat on. Not them, because they ran off.
Mm. So obviously what you're known for and what we know you for is quite high profile criminal activity, I'd say.
Yeah.
What you're talking to me about here is basically a guy that moved to an area, got treated pretty terribly. What's the point where you started to dabble in this kind of, you know, at the point you're talking about now, you're working in the family business. At what point did you start moving across into Birdlines?
Right, okay. The point I moved was like, I knew where we at, yeah? We were just getting shit in the shop, shitty fucking customers, all racist. I thought, fucking, this is not for me, yeah? I'll fuck this bullshit off. I want to fucking make some moves here. I want to make some moves. So I opened up a clothes shop in Newcastle, high fashion. But I had to close that down because the shop was not making money. So I was working with gangster firms from the Northeast. Credit card fraud, okay?
What, you were doing credit card?
Bag snatching, yeah. They were like snatching bags, blah, 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 coming in with fresh cards. Check, can we run this through your shop? Oh, and I would go, yes, go on in, because we've got 1 to 2 hours before it's recorded through. And then back then it was just like, you know.
Oh, the machine that you,
it was a douche, douche, yeah. And then it was easy to do. We could wreck a card for thousands.
And how old were you here?
23, 24.
And that was back, when did you say that was, 90s?
90s, yeah.
90s. So I guess to a young guy who'd come from an unpaid family business, that must have been a lot of money. Do you think that's what gave you a bit of a taste for the operating outside the system?
What gave me a taste was I wanted a high, baby. I wanted to make mills. Not the fucking 800 quid.
Right.
What the fuck am I, 800 quid, yeah? I want to make mills, yeah? So I'm saying I'm going to sell drugs.
Right.
So,
would that, you were looking, you were going, how do I make the big money? And
I knew after this, I have to sell drugs. Because in the 90s, it was so easy to do it.
How does a youngish guy in Newcastle at that point in time, how do you get into selling?
How do I get into that, right? Steroids. Doorman. I was a doorman after that, yeah?
Right.
Okay, because I was training. I was that big. I knew a few guys. I said, listen, the shop had to close down. We had to close the shop down. And he says, right. But my mum and dad's shop was already operating anyway, so I was working there already. So I had an income anyway. Second income I wanted, doorman, but then I wanted a third income, selling drugs. So I wanted like 3 or 4 incomes coming in, not just one.
So at this point, you've moved into door work, and then you said it's steroids, is that right? You were selling steroids.
I was selling at first, yeah.
So how do you find these steroids to sell? Like,
right, how do I find them? I knew a guy I was working with in Newcastle. He used to get them. I used to buy off him. Okay, markup was like, fine, blah, blah, blah. But then I thought, no, listen, I should be the one bringing it in. I want to be the main man, not him. I don't want to go to him to buy, yeah? People should be buying off me. So I made the moves, and Pakistan was the cheapest place in the fucking world to buy, because nobody wants to work with Pakistan, man. Al-Qaeda, Taliban, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, so at that point in time, was that quite
heavy.
Yeah.
Heavy. It's always been heavy. It's heavy now.
I mean, was that not an intimidating thing for you?
No. I loved it. I loved it, man.
What, the danger?
Yeah, I loved it. I love that shit. All right, let's go and die. We either fucking do it or we die, yeah? Because my life has been shit up to now, yeah? So I can't give a fuck. And I said, I either fucking make it, or I'm going to fucking go to jail or boom, shot.
So talk us through the first trip. Who are you going with?
Second cousins I went with. We didn't know where to start or what to do or where to go. We just landed, but I said, listen, I know what to do. Yeah, I know what to do. So we went.
Why? What, did you say that because you wanted to be in control, or were you just kind of
Yeah, no, I want to be in control. I'm the boss, man.
But did you think you knew what to do, or were you just going?
I knew I would do it.
Right.
I knew I would do it. I knew I would do this. I know I could go to Pakistan. Pakistan, corrupt the fuck, like all them other countries. I know I can pay people off there. I can buy people off. I can buy the police, the airport security. I know I can do this. Mm. So I went, yes, I'm going to do it. So I changed my name to Jet Khan, Muslim name, just so I don't get kidnapped or shot in Pakistan. Because if they think I'm a Sikh, because India and Pakistan aren't too good with each other.
Famously.
Especially when I'm going to buy drugs, yeah? So it's a no-no. Jet Khan, but I was a nice guy to them, and I paid my way, and I did my dues, and they were cool with me.
Well, let's go through it step by step, because obviously for someone like me, or potentially I'd imagine a lot of our listeners, it's a completely different world to what we're used to. So you land in Pakistan.
Yeah.
Take us through it.
We like went around first. We had a company name from a box. We traveled to that company, which was 2 hours drive, Pakistan. I spoke to the manager. I said, listen.
What kind of company, sorry?
Steroid company.
Got you. So you were going to go to them and say, can
Organon,
we buy direct?
Organon, he was called. Organon, yeah. We went to the original company. And I said, listen, I want to buy a few. He went, are you a pharmaceutical company? I went, no. I went, we just want to buy a lot of you, yeah? He went, no. I went, what do you mean, no? I went, listen, we'll pay you what you want, yeah? And he just went, no. It was like, I was really shocked by this, yeah? Because I thought I could buy anybody off in Pakistan.
And that's a two-hour drive out the window.
And this was a two-hour drive out the window. And then we were all a bit fucked up. So we went back to the hotel. Prostitutes I spoke to, they went, listen, talk to these people. Talk to this person. Talk to that person. And then we went, we made some contacts. Traders, they were called. I don't know their original name. But they had a set up in a market stall, yeah? It was like a market stall. But they had every pill for sale. Rufnapol, Valium, everything illegal here is available there.
Mm.
And he said, I can supply you, because everybody else said they could only have, give us 10 of these, 10 of them. I went, no, we want 100,000.
Jesus Christ.
They went, yeah. They went, no, we can't, because these guys were doing it. So they linked us up with these guys. They went, they're the main suppliers. And when we went, he was there. Sons were there with shotguns. This is a market stall.
Shotguns at the market stall?
Shotguns at the market stall. And the only chemist, it's a chemist. It's a chemist. Shotguns, yeah, outside, because people try and rob it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because there's big money coming through. Mm. And we landed with 30 large. And we had to pay for the stock up front. He said, listen, I can supply you everything you want. All right.
You're not intimidated at this point?
I wasn't, but my cousins were.
I mean, you're walking in somewhere, you don't know, they're standing out the front with shotguns.
Yeah, in Pakistan.
In Pakistan, you know that there's a problem.
And we're handing over 30 grand, yeah.
Yeah.
They could have told me to fuck off, yeah? You're not getting nothing. What can I do about that? Get shot. But you know what? They did the work. They supplied. I said, listen, I'm back here.
And he's not... So you talk us through, you go in there, the guy's sitting there.
Yeah.
Is he not suspicious of you?
Bashir, no, because he's a big-time drug dealer.
So he feels safe?
Yeah, because his sons are there with shotguns.
Yeah. Right. And you, so there's three of you go in there.
Yes.
You say what you want.
We say the order. Can you get this? Can you get that? He says, yes. He went, have a look on my shelf. And he just had a little stall, you know? It was only about the size of... But I don't know, smallish. But he says, I can supply you with anything you want. Anything you want. Heroin even. 1,500 for a kilo. And that's 90% proof. And back here, you sell that for 50 large.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and you can bash that up twice. So you can make 100 of that. So you pay 1,500 and you can make 100.
And you're trying to buy steroids, is that right?
Steroids only. So, I wasn't interested in heroin, no.
So you give them the money up front?
Yeah.
When do you come back to get your...
The next day.
The next day?
The next day. All packed up. two taxis we had to get for all the stock.
And how much have you bought at this point? How many?
30 grand's worth. It was like 100,000 ampules. Volume then, I just took a little back then. But then the markup on the blues volume was massive. I was buying 1,000 tablets there for £9. Street value here, 1,000. It's a pound a pill.
Wow.
£9 for 1,000 pills. So you can work out the money I was making.
Especially if you're spending 30 grand.
30 grand, motherfucker, yeah.
All right, so you come back the next day, you've got the taxis, you take them to the airport?
No, hotel.
Back to the hotel?
No, they have to get packed up.
Right.
They have to get packed up. My taxi driver the first job he did, what I did here, porno mags. I gave him a porno mag, right?
Okay.
You can't get them in Pakistan.
Okay.
Illegal. Yeah.
Right.
They have never seen a white girl naked.
Okay.
So when you show them a magazine, they're like, oh my God. They're like, fucking hell, what the fuck? Right? I went, okay, I can give you this magazine if you do work for me. So this is how you get work done over there.
How did you have the porn?
Because we're going to Pakistan, man. We got to wank for fucking a week.
I could have answered that question myself, couldn't I? All right,
we're
all
wanking
right.
for a week, baby.
All right, okay. All right, so you did you know it was illegal to take it in?
No.
No,
it's illegal.
So you got there with
you
it.
You can buy it at the airport, can't you? Newcastle Airport.
Right, okay. All right.
So you buy it at Newcastle Airport.
So you get to the taxi driver, you give him the porno mag.
Yeah.
And what do you say to him? We need these.
What I said
up.
To him, I said, listen, I said I'll pay you, right? I said I'll pay you as well. I was going to pay him a month's wage to get the boxes packed. He said, right, I'll do it. And what he did was this. He took it back to his fucking village where he was at, yeah. He got all the young boys to come, sat them all down in front of him and said, right, listen, there was like one ampule in each box, right, okay? But these all have to be packed down, six in each box.
Okay.
And there's like 100,000 ampules here, yeah? Okay, so it's gonna take a long time, yeah. Mm. So he went, right. What he did, he got all the boys, he went, this is what we want packed. Everything has to be packed down. Like, boom, it's massive at the minute, but it has to be condensed, small, so they can take it across. So what he did, showed him the first page of the porno magazine.
Right.
The boys, right? They were like that, you know, right, do one box and I'll turn the page over.
Oh my God.
Yes. So he got it done for free. All these young kids just, bro,
so they were just packing it and he was just showing them?
Just showing my page and I paid him a month's wages.
My God. So you've landed in Pakistan and basically corrupted an entire village
corrupted
on your
them
first...
all, yeah. Yeah, we're porno magazines.
Your first visit, right. Okay, yeah. So you get that lot to the airport. It's all packed up now. You got them in suitcases, is that right?
Yes.
And how... I mean, this is a point where if I was doing something like this, I'd be extremely nervous.
Hmm.
I'm assuming, based on the conversation we've had so far, you weren't.
No.
You don't seem to be someone who feels that kind of...
No, I knew I could do it. I knew I could do it.
And what about your cousins?
They were a bit unsure, but I had the confidence.
Okay. So you get to customs.
Yeah.
Talk us through it.
Firstly, they went, open up your cases. There's like six of them there. Boom, open them up. We were all biggish and we went, listen... Personal use, they just laughed at it, yeah? Because the case was just fucking full of gear. They went, nah, it's not personal use. And then they seen the porno magazines on the side.
Of your suitcase?
I went, you want it? He went, yeah, go on then. I went, listen, I've got two for you. Take them two and let us go through. And they went, yeah. This is airport security. Pakistan, yeah. Imagine this now, right? And then the other X-ray machine, and then we have to go to another X-ray machine. The same thing happened then. I bought them off again with two more mags. And my cousin would go, fucking hell, shit, yeah, you're fucking...
So no money, just
no
the magazines?
No money, just the magazines. And the next time I went through, they knew who I was, and then they started wanting money off me.
But that first time, it was just...
First time, poor magazine.
Wow. Man. I mean, they were quite the investment, weren't they? Those
well,
magazines.
That, to them... I bet they still have them now.
Right, because it's impossible to get it.
It's impossible to get it in Pakistan.
Okay. All right, so then you get them on the plane, and then are you flying straight back to the UK?
Amsterdam.
Amsterdam.
Change at Amsterdam. Amsterdam to Newcastle.
At this point, you must be feeling it, because you're not going to be paying off.
I know we were, yeah. We were stressed out a little bit. We had been drinking, sobering up now a little bit. The flight was early in the morning. We were like, deep breaths, right, let's see what goes down.
At Newcastle, is this?
At Newcastle, yeah. Customs weren't there. We just walked straight through. Boom, high fives.
Because it was a morning shift.
It was a morning shift, and it's come from Amsterdam. Because the flight, because the Pakistan tags took them off, yeah? Because if they know you're coming from Pakistan, they will have a look at your bags. But we took them tags off and just left Amsterdam tags on. So it just looks as if we've just been away at Amsterdam.
Okay. And you just walk straight through into Newcastle, you've got it all.
Yeah.
How long till you went again?
6 weeks.
God.
Because I rolled that money over, boom, that got sold straight away. I went, let's go back. So I went back again. I fell out of my cousins and then I started to take mules over.
So at that point, you're in.
I was taking mules, yeah.
That's your life.
Yeah.
And can you explain for anyone that doesn't know what a mule is?
A mule is somebody that carries drugs. I paid them £1,000 and I would pay their flight, all expenses, all food, blah, 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 everything paid for, and you get a grand in your pocket. But these people don't work. Benefits they're on, blah, you know, they've got nothing to do anyway. They've never been outside fucking England. And so if I'm giving them a grand to carry a case back and I've told them, coming back to England, Class C, it's maximum jail here then was 2 years. I went, the first time you get caught, you're going to get fuck all anyway.
Mm.
But Spain is Class A. So I didn't realise this.
Oh, God. So, okay, well, we'll get onto that. But so with the mules, essentially the payment is for them to take the risk for you. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So you pay them a grand and the flight and all that, but that's on the understanding that if they get caught, they go to prison. They say it was them.
Yes.
Right. And were, that, how, like, were they people you knew or how do you find?
Yes. Well, there's loads that were saying to me, I want to go.
Right. Okay. So you've started running repeated trips. How long was it until you got caught the first time?
Right. I did it for a couple of years. Yeah. I can't say how many trips I've done, obviously. I don't want people who, I don't want the feds to work it all out what he's made.
I suppose you can't say how much money you had either.
Double figures. Double figures, man. Yeah. Double figures I did.
For the trips.
Yeah.
And for the amount of money that you had. That you don't.
It was like, I was making about 60 grand a trip.
It's a lot of money.
Back here, back in the 90s, it was silly money.
Mm. But not
the cash boxes I had, £20 notes I had, cash boxes, safety in banks, right? Back then you could just get a box. Now you can't. Now they want to know everything, yeah? Okay, but back then you could. The £20 notes, I had to get changed into £50 notes because there was no space in the boxes.
Right. God. And it still wasn't enough for that. You weren't
there was
like,
no space in the box.
But you weren't like, okay, that's enough now. I'll just live off that.
No, I'm rolling it until I get fucking done.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is the first time you get caught, is that the big one in Spain? Or did you get caught before that?
No, that was the first one for drugs.
Okay.
Big one. Yeah.
That's the big one. All right. Yeah. So talk us through how you got to that point.
I went through Spain because I lost a load. Because, right, we changed to Amsterdam, but our bags never came through. Two mules I had with me, the bags never came through. And then they said, right, your bags are on the next flight. And I thought, fuck. But the mules were happy about this because they still paid the grand and now they're not even carrying the fucking case.
Right.
So fuck them, yeah? So I thought, fuck you. Anyway, Newcastle Airport said, right, your bags are here and we've opened them up. But we will tell you, if you come to collect these bags, you are going to get arrested.
They called you and said that?
Yeah.
That's a strange thing to do.
I know, it's because Class C, I know, because they opened my bags.
But it's strange for them to warn you, I would have said.
Well, they've opened my bags. This is England. Any other country, they wouldn't even tell you.
You'd just turn up and be arrested.
Yeah. But England has said, this is law. We have opened your bags and we will say to you, if you do come and get these, you are going to be arrested.
So I guess you didn't go.
No. So I thought, fuck off. So a different route I had to take through Spain. Through Spain, and then I was going to get the Channel Tunnel back.
And what you didn't realise was that the Class C drugs in the UK were Class A drugs.
Class A in Spain, yeah.
Let's talk about how you got caught. You, why were you there? Why, instead of the mules, you know, like, what was the point you realised you were caught? Let's go into that in Spain.
Interpol, trap my flight. Interpol were on my case. Tracked all my flights. They knew what I was doing. The chief narcotics officer, Cracciopo, he said, I will guarantee you safe, boom, out of here. But once you're out of here, it's got nothing to do with me. Yeah, okay? So, all right, fair enough. And but people were knowing my operation, obviously, and they must have been knowing I'm making a lot of money, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and they're supposed to talk to the police, blah, 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 tracking me, and Interpol knew I was doing that. And when I landed in Spain for the first time, they were just there with guns, boom.
As soon as you landed?
Waiting, yeah.
That must have been quite a
feeling. Yes.
So what's the process? Do they grab you straight away or do they make you open the bags or how does it work?
Well, yeah, the bags, our bags were late. Everybody else had their bags. Ours, not there. So we're waiting. Waiting because the police, Interpol, had to come. So everybody else had left the airport at this point and we're just fucking stood there waiting for our bags. But really, the police are going to come. The Guardia Civil, boom, Interpol, and they went, right, you, bam. We know what you're doing in this. Laughed and went, whoa, look at all this. And it was like, for them, it was a good bust.
Mm.
It was a good bust.
And did you say to me at the beginning it was the biggest one they'd ever had at that point?
Yes, it's the biggest pharmaceutical bust in Spanish history and still is. A quarter of a million pills and 50,000 amp mules.
And that's just you?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so what happens next?
We got locked up, man. The mules, the police were interrogating them. And they did say, okay, it's him. It's all him. Because they were scaring him. They said, you're going to get 10 to 15 here.
Mm.
Right? So you either say who is the boss. They knew I was the boss anyway, yeah?
Mm.
And but they just want to hear it off them. And once they heard it off them, cushy number they got a nice cells, this and that. I got put in a container outside with no windows and no food or water for 2 days.
Wow.
2 days. Pissing the fucking corner and shit.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you know at that point you were in pretty big trouble?
I'm fucked, yeah, because they took everything off me. I had rings, I had jewellery, the police, Spanish police just took everything off me. They went, we know who you are. And they just took my rings, my watch, my this, my that, everything, zero, boom. Left for fuck all, container outside.
Do you ever see that stuff again?
No, never.
That was just gone?
Gone.
Okay, so you're outside in the container. At this point, scared or nervous?
Yeah. Because I know what's coming here. But bail, I was told I would get bail. They said if you get a good lawyer, blah, blah, blah. But that never happened either. That never happened.
So after that, is it straight to court for you?
2.5 years I was inside first before I went to court.
So it's straight to prison?
Straight to prison because they want to do research on me, see if I've got a yacht in Spain, I've got any houses, got cars, because they want to take everything off me.
Right.
They want to take everything off me. So Cat A, they stuck me doing their fucking things, whatever they fucking do. I don't know what the feds fucking do, but they didn't find fuck all anyway. And I had nothing in Spain anyway.
Mm.
But 2.5 years it took them to do that.
And you've spoken before about, I think it was quite a violent prison, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you get to prison in Spain. Obviously, I don't think you spoke Spanish, did you, at that point?
No.
So you get to a Spanish prison, which is quite a sort of high security, violent prison.
Uh-huh.
How did you get on when you got in there?
Not good at first. Not good. I was angry. On a come down. I'd lost fucking the feds had took about 100 grand off me. I'd lost a lot of money. It was hard work, man. And where I was at, I was Cat A. The Spanish jails, Fuencarral is the worst jail in Spain, and Spanish jails are the worst in Europe, and I'm in the worst wing. So I'm in the worst place you can be, I think. And everybody there was in for like massive sentences. A third of them had AIDS. They're all murderers, killers. But they stuck me there because they thought I had money. And they thought I was a high risk. And it wasn't fucking easy, man. I thought I was going to get bail for the first month. I thought I was going to get bail. And then after about a month, sunk in, right, I'm here for the long haul. 10 years. And
10 years.
10 years. That's what I got told you.
Okay.
And I thought, I can't do 10 years with all these people because they've all got AIDS, stabbing each other daily. They're all on smack. I was on heroin just to escape a little bit.
Oh, you were buying that in the jail?
Yeah.
Because the jail that you were in, I think, Fuencarral, is that who you're
from? Fuencarral, yeah.
Fuencarral. There's a famous story that one of the prisoners once got stabbed for snoring in that prison. As yeah. in, like, is that what you the side you saw of it? Like the high
yeah,
level?
Yeah,
violence,
it was terrible, man. Terrible. You get stabbed there for fuck all.
Yeah.
You get stabbed for fuck all. If you look at somebody the wrong way, you can get a fucking knife stuck in your neck.
So were you trying to sort of find allies in there, or were you just staying off on your own?
Right, at first, I was staying off my own sort of thing. There was only a couple of people who could speak English. There was an Algerian guy. He could speak English, so I stuck with him. And he told me how it rolls. Carlos, he was there. He could speak English. He was educated, but all the rest, English not. So I had to learn the language. And the screws refused to speak to him in English. Even though they know English, they will say, habla español, coño, which means speak Spanish, cunt.
Right.
Yeah. So because you're here now, you're not English, so don't fucking try and speak English with us.
Did you feel threatened while you were in there? Was there a constant sense of danger from other prisoners?
Yes, yes. Yeah. They all had knives. They're on there for stabbings and shit, petty fucking arguments over fucking drugs. This is their life because they're all doing 30, 40 years. They've got AIDS. They're not leaving. They ain't leaving that place. They know they're going to die there. So they will take anybody out.
So there's no sense of getting out for them, and that's as, no. They're in the worst
yes.
place they can be anyway.
Yes,
yeah.
And that's what I thought I was in.
So did you have any altercations with people, or were you staying off?
No, loads. I had loads of fights there. I stabbed people there.
Did you?
I got stabbed there twice.
God.
I got stabbed twice, and I stabbed people there.
Based on just arguments?
Bullshit, yeah. The first time I stabbed somebody, right, what happens there? You get pills, yeah? Every day, they give you pills to, like, keep everybody calm because this is, like, dangerous people here. So they pill you up, yeah? So everyone's on a fucking lower level. This guy, he got his pills, Juan, and he taxed people. So he would take pills off people, bam, bam, bam. And he took it off this other guy, and he was sat on the fucking step crying. And when Carlos I was with, and then I couldn't even speak their language, and I said, Carlo, ask him, yeah, what's wrong with him? And he said, okay, Juan taxed me. I went, has he? I went, who? He went, him over there. I went, right, okay. So I walked over to him, yeah. Now at this point, yeah, I'm you know me, I'm fucking angry as fuck here because I'm here, I'm stuck here. So I thought, okay, if I'm stuck here, I'm gonna kill it as well. Fuck them all. So I went to him, I went, oi, why did you take his pills? He went, fucking, I do what the fuck I want, yeah? What the fuck's it got to do with you? But this is through an interpreter, mm-hmm. Carlos, right? He was speaking Spanish, and Carlos was telling me what he was saying in Spanish and English. So this is through an interpreter, an argument. I went, yeah, really? I went, tell him, showers now, fight. He went, told him, all right, okay, look, let's fucking go then. All right, go on then. So showers we went. I thought it's a fist fight, yeah? But the interpretation must have got a bit mixed up, and it was a knife fight.
Jesus.
Yeah, knife fight. Right? I didn't even fucking know this. So I walked in the showers, and then he pulls out a fucking blade on me, yeah? And I went, right, okay, baby. And then Carlo, he goes, here, have mine. And then he just handed me the blade. He took a swipe at me, bam, miss, bam. I stuck him, put him on his ass. It went straight through the middle of him. And he got took to hospital, but he didn't open his mouth. I don't know what happened to him. But his cousin, 6 months later, stabbed me in the back in the gym with like a nail on a shank.
Jesus Christ. So when you say you don't know what happened to him, do you know that if he lived or died or?
I don't know.
Don't care?
No.
Do you ever think about stuff like that?
No.
No?
No, fuck him. He wanted to kill me.
Right. And all that came from the guy that had been taxed. Did you know that guy?
No. That was an innocent.
So why were you so angry about him being
I don't dead? Know. I was just angry, man. I was just in a fucking... I just fucking hate shit like that. People getting picked on, bullied.
Does it remind you of when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I thought, if I can stick up, I fucking will stick up.
Mm. I'll be honest, that sounds horrific to me. Did you ever see anything like that? Did you ever see anything else in prison going on like that? Did you see worse things than that?
Yeah. Carlo, another guy... He was the main.
Is this the guy that you were friends with?
No.
A different Carlo.
Another Carlo. This Carlo was doing life, double life. He killed two people inside. He only went in initially for burglary. But once he was inside, he started to fucking inject, got AIDS, and then mindset wrong. And then he stabbed people, and then he killed another two people. So he was on that wing. But he was like 7 stone, skinny, but his eyes were dead. You could see he was fucked in the head, yeah. But his family had money and he was a main smack dealer on the wing. So his story was this. This other guy, what happens here in Spain, everybody grasses everybody up, right? Mm. But this is the wrong person to grass up. And he didn't really know this one because he'd come from a different wing, had a fight, come on our wing. He knew he was a heroin dealer. Grassed him up the screws.
You grassed Carlo up?
Carlo up, yes. Carlo got searched, bam, 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 did 30 days down the block, down the hole.
Is that solitary?
Yes, that's the hole. Oh, it's tiny. The space, and you don't get to see anybody for a whole fucking month. The food gets just pushed under through the fucking floor. And
that must be intense.
You're not even allowed to walk outside or even talk to anybody. 30 days he did there. 30 days he came out. And people think, right, Carlo, okay, yeah, I made a move on him, yeah? He's already killed two people inside already. Didn't make a move. Saturdays, visit comes, right? Family members come. It's like a glass window. Pick up the phone, there on the other side. Us lot, we get filed in this side. Cubicles, boom, boom, boom. Other people are on the other side, obviously, yeah? And Carlo had a visit. And this guy, Grastim, had a visit of his mom, his niece, and sister came to see him. 3 women. Anyway, Carlo shank up his ass, yeah, because we all get a metal detector, yeah, okay? But if it's up your ass, it does not do it because it doesn't go through skin. And so he had a shank up his ass. So he put it up his ass, went into the cubicles. He went to his cubicle, Carlo went to his, and then took the shank out of his ass, walked into his cubicle, and stabbed him 11 times in front of his mama, killed him there and then. And then he came by on the wing and went, why didn't you do that earlier? He went, no, I want to kill him in front of his mum. He said, I want to make a fucking example of the motherfucker. You don't grasp me.
God. You've said a few times about them having AIDS. What's that? Why do people have AIDS in there?
Sharing needles, mostly.
I see.
Sharing needles. Rape happened, yes, but catching AIDS like that is like rare, because if you fuck somebody with AIDS, if you got AIDS, you fuck somebody else, there's only a 1 in 60 chance you can get AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite slight. You know?
You said at that point you were taking heroin. Were you not worried about that, using needles?
I was smoking, man.
Oh, okay.
I never injected.
Right, because of that?
Yes. I don't share a needle.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a disturbing experience. How long were you in there for?
3 years.
3 years. So you'd had your... How long were you sentenced for?
Two and a half years until I got a sentence. And then I had to... And then I learned Spanish. I spoke to the top heads there, the bank robbers, this, that. They went, listen, you need this lawyer. Because this lawyer, he knows corrupt people. Pay him off. He went, okay, he's going to want money off you, but he'll get your sentence halved. I'm like, will he? I'm like, right, okay. 4.5 years I got in the end.
Because you'd spoken to this.
I spoke to them and I paid them $9,000.
Half your sentence?
Judge, yeah.
I mean, that's worth it, isn't it?
Oh, yes. So I thought he wanted more.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah.
But they do this daily.
Right.
This happens on a daily basis. So if you're getting grands on a daily basis.
So you've done 3.5 years. Uh-huh. You get sentenced to 4.5. So you've got like a year left to do at that point?
No, I did.
You'd done 2.5?
2.5. 4.5 I got, so I only have to serve 3. 6 months I had left, piece of cake.
Man, so at that point you were just like, I'm going home.
I'm going home soon, baby, yeah.
But surely at that point the fear of things happening in prison must have lifted, because if you end up getting in a altercation with someone and something happens to them, yes, you might get added time.
Yes. This is why I was scared. This is why I got stabbed in the back. When he stabbed me, I turned around. Yeah, it just felt like a thud, okay? It just felt like a thud. And I turned around, bang, I just banged him. And then I felt it, yeah? And then I seen his fucking knife. And then I was thinking, do I take that knife and stick it in his fucking neck? But then I was thinking, if I do that, I'm getting a 10-year here, baby. So I had to leave it. I left it.
To get out?
To get out, man.
So you get... The day's approaching to the day you're leaving. Mm. Did you know what your end date was, or was it?
No. My lawyer was that cool. He got me expulsion. I got expulsion. I got out 2 months earlier, expelled. So I can't enter. So they gave me a condition. I can't enter Spain for 10 years. I said, okay, I'm happy with that. I don't want to come fucking back here anyway. Yeah. They went, we're going to expel you, okay? You can't come back for 10 years. I'm like, right. The screw, head screw, he went, Sandu. I'm like, what? I was in a gym at the time, training. He went, papers are here, you're out. I'm like, what? He went, now? He went, go pack your stuff. But I was that happy. I just had shorts on and a vest on. I was that happy that I was going. I just gave all my clothes and all my shit away to everybody. So I went to the airport and just my shorts and my vest, November, and Gatwick.
Oh, so you got flown back just in how you left?
Two marshals handcuffed. I was handcuffed at the back of the flight, 12 seats. They had to people had to move. They held back the flight, gun marshals, handcuffed. Gatwick, they checked if I had any offences here. They went, no, you have not. Opened the cuffs and I went, right, fuck off.
So they just walked you in, opened your cuffs, shorts, right, and a vest.
Right, go.
What time's this?
It was about 7 o'clock in the evening. And then I didn't even get a hotel because I was that excited to be out. I just walked around London all night, all day. I just walked because I've never seen people, normal people, for 3 fucking years. Hashish I had up my ass.
you learn a lot in prison.
Your ass there is an extra pocket, okay?
Yeah.
That's where you keep everything. So some cash I had, because I used to be the money lender in jail. That was my job in jail, money lending, getting double back the next fucking week, blah, blah, blah. That's how I made the money there. So I thought, if I can make money here, I can make money anywhere.
Mm. Basically, I know there's lots of other things that have happened in your life after that. This is the main bit I want to talk about. We did a previous video together. Uh-huh. There was quite a lot of comments on that. Uh-huh. I don't know if you looked at any of them.
But right.
It was interesting going through them because it kind of it fell into a split of half the people were saying stuff all I see is a guy that had a bad start in life and tried to make the best of it. And the other half were saying, this guy doesn't care about anyone.
Yeah.
Now, which side do you fall on? Do you see yourself as someone that had a bad start and then had to fight to get anywhere in life? Or do you
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yes, it was. It was a struggle, man.
Mm.
And if I didn't do what I did, where would I be? still behind a fucking till in a shop. No. I wanted to do it, man. I want to do it. I want to make the millions. I want the fucking this. I want this. I want that. I want to do this. Control areas. I want an empire.
And how do you feel now? Do you still feel that way or have you calmed down a bit?
No, I still feel a fucking way.
Do you?
I'm still a bit strange. I am calmer, but zero tolerance I have with people. If somebody even like, no, I'm like, jail mode is set in my head. Like in jail, if somebody looks at you the wrong way, you act on it. You act on it.
And do you think that time that you spent in the Spanish prison is, do you think it's affected you for the rest of your life?
Yes.
When you look back on that, you know, you went from, like you say, working in a family business to having the biggest drugs import that they'd had on their history, their records at that point.
Yes.
It's a lot of your life that you went to prison for in Spain
and
other places afterwards. Yeah. Do you have any regrets?
Regrets, yes, because I lost my children, you know. I wasn't a dad. I had four kids and I just fucked it all up, yeah, because I was just concentrating on dollar and drugs and fuck up. I fucked up there. Yes, I did. And now they don't like the person I am. They don't, which is understandable because I wasn't there for a man. But at the time, the drugs and the money and the fucking what I wanted overpowered being a dad, get me? Being a dad was like secondary.
Is that something you'd like to work on further?
Well, I try to. I try to get them back. I try to be cool. But they ain't having it. they ain't having it.
And when they see you on things like this, because you've done quite a lot of kind of stuff like this, do you think they watch it? Do they?
I don't know. Yes, they do probably watch it, but I don't know. They never give me a comment on it. They never tell me. But they're not happy with me, man.
One thing that was, there was a lot of comments about on the first video is at the end, when you're talking about the impact your life had on your family, you got quite emotional. And a lot of people said in that like, because you come across as, I mean, even to me who've met you a few times, you're quite an intimidating bloke. You know, you're obviously somebody who has, you don't have a lot of fear within you. You're very driven about getting what you want. And potentially it doesn't matter who's standing in your way.
Oh, good, fuck.
But a lot of the comments on that first video were saying like, essentially there's ones that say, but you can see that he is a good guy because he got so emotional about the impact it had on his family. Fair enough. What do you think about that?
Yeah, my mum, man. Fucked it up, didn't I?
Your relationship with her?
My mum, my children, yeah. I wasn't really thinking about that at the time, you know? At the time, I was just thinking about the drugs, the money, the fucking fame, this, that, who I am. 20s or then, yeah? That was like, boom, powering me through it. But yeah, my mum. I wouldn't do it again.
You wouldn't do it again?
I did two sentences, yeah. The first sentence killed her. When I went in again, wow, killed her even more off.
And is that the impact it had on her is what would stop you reliving that life again?
Yeah.
So it's really interesting meeting you, Chet, because obviously you have a totally different life to anything I've ever known. And what occurs to me is that you had like a pretty shit start and you did what you thought you had to do to get yourself through. And obviously you made those decisions then, and it is sad to see that the impact it's had on you, because a lot of it, I think, probably wasn't at the very beginning. You got set up badly. But look, do you want a minute?
Go on.
Yeah.
We'll go for a wee, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, do you want a bit more 7-Up? Get a bit of a sugar rush off it.
I'm going to talk a bit.
Yeah. Do you want me to show you where it is?
No, I know where it is.
Yeah. All right, Chet, like, it's an amazing story. I mean, I've heard you tell bits of it a few times on different places, and it's one that you just, to someone like me who didn't live that life, you just never get bored, and you tell it so well as well.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I just wondered for you, like, as a final word, just as a kind of sum up on the stuff that you've been through. If someone's watching this for the first time and they've never heard of you before, how would you describe yourself? What would you say to someone that's watching for the first time and has got to the end of your story?
I was a fucking Indian boy, Asian boy, 60s born, been through the mill, stutter, backward classes I was put in because they said he's brown and he can't even speak English. So I was like put in the back. I took shit all my life. Authority have always told me what to fucking do, which I do not like. And my dad was very strict with me as well. So all I've had all my life is like been told what to do. You're here, you're there. You can't do this, you can't do that. You can't do this, you can't do that. Bam, 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 bam. And getting accused for shit I ain't even fucking done. And I just went fucking mental, I think. Basically.
Do you think you still are? Or do you think have you come out the
other
side?
Everybody says I'm still a bit fucking flipped, yeah.
Okay.
But I think I'm all right. I think I'm all right, personally. I don't want to get tested for anything. For this diagnosis or this diagnosis, or has he got this or has he got that? Like, people just go now, oh, I've got OCD, oh, I'm autistic, oh, I'm this. Do you know how many orders I must have? I ain't going there.
Are you at the point of your life where you're happy with who you are?
Yes. Yes, I am. Because the people around me now are all good. Me and my mum now, cool. My dad, he's all right, but he knows he's given me a hard time in the past, and he knows that. He knows he was wrong to me. He knows he shouldn't have done what he did because I was an artist originally. I wanted to go to art college, but it's my old man that said no, and he stuck me behind the till. So he took my life away from me.
Understood. Thanks again for coming back, mate. Appreciate your time.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Thank you, man.
You good?
We done now?
We done.
You guys are funny, man. You always fuck me up.